content discussed on this show is not necessarily the opinion of the cast of Spiritually Raw, and topics quite often are for mature audiences only. So, if you happen to have your 13-year-old listening in...
That's your problem.
Hello, everybody. How are you? And welcome to Spiritually Raw. It's great to spend today with you with another amazing guest. And listen, you know, everything in life has to start off with gratitude. And we'd like to show our gratitude to you, or share our gratitude with you, I should say, is by always going to our YouTube channel, liking, sharing, commenting, and subscribing on that. That really does mean a lot. It helps get these messages out there and also just gets more people just really just aware and awakened, if you would, as a lot of our guests have been saying, to what's happening in today's events. So thank you for that. And also too, if you would like to become a guest on our show, you can go to spirituallyraw.com and get the information there. Just send the information to us and we'll reach back out to you on that. So in the spirit of talking about what's happening today, I'm going to flip it over to April because she's going to talk about our next guest.
And off we go, right? Yes. Okay. Up today, we have Nigel Bruce Lott. He was a late-stage chronic alcoholic with chronic profound levels of PTSD. He was living on the streets of Seattle 34 years ago. Nigel has moved through lengthy, complex levels of profound suffering and is seen as to continually reinvent new resources, new ways to make choices in his healing process. He is British, and his daughter describes him as very Monty Python-ish with an Eastern Indian accent. He claims because of all the vindaloo he's eaten, and if anybody doesn't know what vindaloo is, it is Indian curry. It's type of Indian curry. Nigel Bruce Lott is a teacher, guide, sage, and mentor, and you can connect with him at www.tnzen.org.
All right, Nigel, welcome to the show. How are you, my brother?
Thank you, Nigel.
I'm all right, thank you.
It's good to have you here too. So Nigel, you're a sage. This is pretty cool. I mean, we haven't talked to a sage in a long time.
A very long time.
So
how do you get to become a sage? What are the levels?
Well, June the 6th, 1986, about 3:15 p.m. We've all got all the wisdom in the world, in the universe within us, all of us do. But at 3:15 p.m. on June the 6th, I went into a treatment center. And I was very fortunate, as I have been over the years. I've met so many people with gray beards, and that includes women. And I mean that as a metaphor and literally. With long gray beards. This is now I, but he was able to tell me, we were in the kitchen and I was still in detox, but I remember, and it's been the cornerstone of my life ever since, what he said to me. He said, do you know what addiction is? You know what alcoholism is? I said, no. He said, it's an intense desire to find peace and bliss in God again. And I didn't like the word God for years. I didn't like it at that moment because of what happened to me as a choir boy in the church years earlier. So I equate God to the word love, but a love beyond your wildest dreams. He said, addiction is this intense desire to find peace and bliss in God again, thinking that you had become separate. And indeed, most of us do, somewhere around the moment of our birth or maybe before, we actually think the way the ego thinks is that God left us here, abandoned us here. And that really is the core of all of our grief in our lives. And the truth is, what I learned that day, and has ever increasingly grown in me, is that actually God or that love never, ever left me, has never left me.
How did
you get to that conclusion, though?
Well,
Because I'm sure there's tons of people that struggle with that.
In another way, you've been looking for yourself outside of yourself in your addictions. Not knowing that you've been here all along. It's in you. He said, you know, there's a love in you, Nigel, that's beyond your wildest dreams. Even to describe it with words like ecstasy doesn't even come close. What that started at that point was, and I shook and shuddered for years. I mean, therapy back then for me, even when I got sober, was sitting on my therapist's couch, Tony, with a blanket, and I just shook. Because that's what I did. But what that guy said, what it set up in me was this thing where no matter what suffering or pain I was to go through in walking back to myself, there's an old adage in AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, that if you walk 25 miles into a forest, you've got 25 miles to walk back out. But no matter what happened to me, I always knew and then began to practice and then got the experience of finding ways to transcend the suffering, the travail in my life, and bring myself back home to that love within myself.
Can you give us some examples of how you found those ways to transcend yourself back to yourself?
Oh, God. So many ways. But one of the most profound experiences I ever had was that I was dogged with these very, very severe. We've never discovered what they are. We still don't know where the core of them are. They happen, but rarely now. But I used to go to sleep and wake up maybe 10 minutes into sleep in such a state of terror that my blood pressure would be around 220 over 240 over 120, and my heart rate would be through the 200s.
While you're sleeping?
Just, I would wake out of sleep like that.
Was that part of the detox you were going through, or was this part
of this was later on. I'm sorry, that was later in life. I mean, that this all started about 25 years ago. Mm-hmm. You're asking about how I found my way back to equilibrium, to that love within. Mm-hmm. This was one of my most severest tests, if you like. And during that period of time, they would last for sometimes an hour, 2 hours. But one night I woke up and there was a little book over in the corner of my bookshelf, which I'd bought so many years before, but had never read. It looked good on the bookshelf, but I'd never read it. And it was called God's Breath. And in that instant, I started to breathe really, really deeply, taking in volumes of oxygen, and just kept breathing, not knowing where I was going with this or whatever. But I found over time that deep breathing would lower the cortisol levels and the adrenal levels, and it would back it off and bring me to a place of peace and equanimity, although it would take me several days to sort of clear the adrenaline. So
where was that coming from?
We don't know. No, we don't know. I've had, like I said to you, I've had many, many people in my life who have guided me. I've been extremely fortunate. I've had the most amazing experiences of meeting masters, both ascended and still walking the planet, who have been there for me and guided me along the way.
Can you give us an example of some of the ascended masters, or mm-hmm. maybe one of the ascended masters that you've met and what that experience was like?
Yeah, one of the great lovely ones was I had been in I'd had a concussion in November 2016. And I was going to this clinic to get my brain retrained or whatever for about a year because it was a very serious head injury. And as I was walking out from that appointment, there was a fellow, the first thing I noticed, he had a blue turban on. I'd never seen somebody from India, obviously, or from that part of the world with a blue, ice blue turban on. And they pulled the chair that was in the reception area that was against the wall out into the middle of the foyer of the lobby of the reception area, and I had to walk around him. And as I walked around him, he was holding up one of those very old, when you're getting your eyes tested, it used to be a metal frame with lots of lenses in it, and you look through it, and then the optometrist on the other side would look. And anyway, I walked past, I didn't look back, I walked out of the door, up to the top of the steps, and then I looked back, and instantaneously, I saw this Indian-looking gentleman, impeccably dressed, with these brogue shoes, Harris tweed jacket, the most beautiful cultured moustache, beard, blue turban. But what he had was this thing that was holding up to his face that showed this eye on this side to be at the brightest. I mean, really, really bright. And his eyes were ice blue. And at the same time, he looked at me, I looked at him, and he went like this, like a knowing like. And at that time, I had been interested in Saint Germain, and I had friends who, their master was Saint Germain. And when I recanted this experience to them, they said, "Oh, this is, you just met Saint Germain." But I've had a fellow called Yogi Raj Satgurunath Siddhanath, who, I met in 2007, who became my guru for many, many years. I had
This was not ascended, right? This was living?
This was living, sorry.
This was a living master. Okay,
that's right. Was it in India?
No, it was here in the US. It was in Seattle. And he was visiting. I didn't know him. But my marriage was in a terrible state at that time. And I thought that, I said to my wife, I said, "Look, let's go along and maybe we can get our marriage blessed by this Satguru." So I went along, and we went along. It was very interesting, really. I was sitting one side of the auditorium, and my wife was sitting the other side. We were not together. And like I said, I was in a lot of denial about the extent of the suffering that I was in. But at some point, I said to this, I said, "Master," and he looked, I said, "Can you, would you be willing to bless my, our marriage?" And he stopped walking the stage, looked at me, and then began to walk backwards and forwards. And what I believe today is that, he was looking at my Akashic records. He was looking at the truth underneath. And then he said, "Come," to my wife and myself. And we both went up to the stage. And as I went up to the stage, he asked us to kneel. He was up there. And as I went to kneel, there was a picture of Babaji. You know Babaji? There was a picture of Babaji. Now, this picture was wooden framed. It had a glass front. And he picked it up and he just smashed it over my head.
Oh, my God.
Oh, you smashed the picture.
I put my arm up to defend myself. And he hit me again. And he hit my wife at the time. And I thought, my goodness me.
My gosh, man.
That's crazy.
What kind of goal is that? I mean, it's like physically hitting you. This is not metaphorically hitting you, right?
Were people watching?
Oh, yeah.
And did anybody react with like a gasp?
So within 24 hours, the marriage was over.
Oh, so he was releasing you from it, right?
Yes, that was the blessing.
All right, there you go.
That was the blessing. I was thinking it was going to be rose petals falling from
the sea. Right. No, that's good, though. I mean,
but actually, I just want to go back and just share with you something that just popped into my head. One of the great experiences that I had about knowing about that love inside of me was walking along one day, not in a relationship, and having this experience, and my mind was inquiring, what's this experience? And of course, I was feeling like I was falling in love, but I wasn't in a relationship. And then I realized that what actually happens, what is going on when people fall in love, is that that's coming from within me, that the other person is reflecting in that moment.
So that you were falling back in love with yourself, and then that energy was projecting. And so that's how people were seeing it, which in turn attracts them to you. Is that what you were saying?
No, I'm just saying that love is always there. But there's a certain chemistry, there's a certain destiny to it all. You meet somebody someday and you say, oh, I'm falling in love with you. And we hope so much that they say they're falling in love with you too. But we think they're bringing us something that we didn't have before we met them. And that's,
I gotcha. Yeah. So you're looking outside too. You're looking outside for that.
Yeah. And the unfortunate thing is that we don't understand, which is part of where I help people, is that light of love shines a light on all the places in you. Your angry, frightened, sad, suffering places. For a healing, it starts to bring it up. But anyway, getting back to...
How do you do that? Like, what exactly do you do? Are you praying over people? Are you meditating for them?
No. I just help them understand that.
Oh.
And it's not something that... I don't do hands-on stuff. I mean, I'm...
Well, you can't today without gloves, right? Without the COVID stuff. Hey, Nigel, hold on for a sec. We got to take a quick break, if you would, and we'll be right back, okay?
Get worldwide exposure. Be heard live on hundreds of the world's largest live broadcast stations. Spiritually Raw, the ass-whipping truth wants you. We expose and explore controversial truths, myths, theories, and dogmas surrounding the spirit world, and no topic is taboo. Do you have an amazing or unusual personal story? Are you an author, expert, or authority in ancient mysteries, conspiracy theories, UFOs, aliens, world religions, or anything revolving around the spirit world? If so, then Spiritually Raw wants you. Be a featured guest, highlight your products and services, and showcase your personality. We book up really fast, so go to spirituallyraw.com and submit your request today.
All right, everybody, and welcome back to Spiritually Raw. We are here with Nigel the Sage, and he's going to tell us about the sage in a second. So
I don't like to call myself a sage.
Can I call you a sage? Because I like calling sage. I think that's really nice.
Other people do, but I don't see myself. There's only one love. Like, there's three of us sitting here, but there's only one love between the three hearts, and we're all, I don't put myself out there as a sage or anything. My name's Nigel, and I just...
My name's Jay.
And that's April.
Yeah, that's April.
I help people wherever I can. And so I just want to...
Are you psychic?
The Yogi Raj, that Gurunath story of... it was a year later that I met him at an airport. And one of the first questions I asked him, I said, what did you hit me over the head with back then that set me free from a very painful dynamic? And he said, oh, I hit you over with absolute truth. Mm. That's what he hit me with. And that's what's And that's been my journey, is that I understood from the very beginning, just a little bit, that there was a love within me that was beyond my wildest dreams and is within all of us. And then how can I awaken to that? And every moment I'm angry, frightened, or sad, anger is grief. Fear is grief. It's all a grief, sad moment, and it's always about the same thing. In that moment, I think that I am separate from all that is, that I'm separate from that love. And is that true? No. I mean, when I had cancer in 2002, that was another great experience of being diagnosed with cancer. The last thing before I left the doctor's office was, this is going to kill you. Great. So we were in the operating theater 2 days later. Cut a long, long story short. When I went home that night, I was frightened out of my skin. I was actually stunned. But when I woke up the next morning, I was in a place of absolute bliss. Because the only thing, it became very, very clear, the only thing that mattered was to love and be loved. That's the only thing. And there's a lot of people who realize, but they usually realize that at the moment of their death. And I was in a place like that for all the time that I lived with that cancer. And then you see the way it works. Early one Saturday morning, a long time later, I got a call from the guy who had operated on me last, and he said, you know, I don't think this is going to come back. It's a particular kind of papillary tumor. I don't think this is going to come back. Oh, and my wife had been out shopping. This is back in 2002. And she'd forgotten the maple syrup for my tea. I like maple syrup in my tea. And I immediately went to get snotty about that. See, because now I'm going to live, right? Mm. So it's like the ego's kicked right back in straight away. So what I came to answer myself at that time was, is this really that important to distance from love over? Is it? No. And ultimately, nothing is. Or better still is, love can't go anywhere. That love can't go anywhere. It's no matter how hard you try. There are people in my life who, just a few, that I would not see anymore. I won't be in their presence anymore because of certain dynamics that are hurtful to me. Why keep walking back into that?
Mm-hmm.
But as Ram Dass said, he was another great teacher of mine way back, that he said, you know, do what you do with another person, but you never put them out of your heart. So the practice has been that I might separate from somebody, but you find a way to open to the love. Because any anger or fear or resentment that you carry around about anybody or anything, that's resonating in your own heart.
Mm-hmm.
It's hurting you.
When you talk to these ascended masters, are they, I guess what I best word I could think of, is they separate from you, if you would, or are they coming through your source energy? How does one connect with them? Do you have to go to another plane?
No. Things just happen. I'll wake up. It's more of something will happen in my life that tells me somebody is there to reinforce my path. I've got a little character here.
Bring him on the air.
Ganesh.
Ganesh, yeah.
Right, Ganesh. I don't know where this came from.
You weren't kidding when you said little. Morning. That is little.
It's a little guy.
That's I woke little, up one,
like a pocket version, right?
I woke up one morning and he was standing on my kitchen table.
Yeah, wow.
I don't know where that came from.
And so you don't know where he came from?
No.
No, he just showed up.
He just showed up.
That's interesting.
I've got a little hole in my bedroom here that's still there. I woke up one morning and there was a little hole, perfectly round hole with a bright, shiny, brand new penny stuck in the hole.
Does he go for a ride? Does he go for a ride with you in your shirt pockets and stuff? Do you take him along with you for the day?
No, I just leave it there. I mean, it's still there. I don't know where that came from or stuff, but I, the point is, it's like, I don't teach anybody anything they don't already know.
Mm.
None of us do. We all just awaken to the truth. I mean, I used to, and yeah, I do a lot of work still, and I've done a lot of work with chemical
addiction. Can I ask you something real quick? You said awaken to the truth.
Yeah.
Many people's interpretation of the truth is really different. So what exactly is the truth from your perspective?
That I'm always connected to that love, to the universe, no matter what I think.
Mm-hmm.
I am always connected to the universe. It's like the Bhagavad Gita says, the great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. But of course, I'm a human being and I have preferences. But if certain things happen, then I feel angry, frightened, sad. And there are moments when I think that I'm separate. Mm-hmm. So, but I do a lot of work in addiction. Because I had a profound, I mean, I'm chemical addiction, but also relationship and monetary too. Anything, so, we're looking to fulfill ourselves from the outside in, always. Because we're separate from the very thing that we need to fulfill ourselves.
So what do people come to you for? So like, tell me, can you kind of paint a picture when someone reaches out to you? How does that conversation even transpire? They're just, Nigel, well, I need some help on this, or?
People reach out and they don't like to hear it sometimes, you know, but I'm always asking about their chemical addiction,
mm-hmm.
their alcohol use, mainly because those are major central nervous system suppressants. So if you're wanting to evolve spiritually, even marijuana, in getting the high, the low is not going away, and you're actually suppressing that lower. It's the high that you're getting. Yes, it's appearing real, but you can't stay there. You have to come back down. So I'm always, people who come to me, I'd like to help them with their addiction first, let them know something about the love inside of them, and then how can we cultivate that?
Nigel, did your situation with alcoholism stem from the experiences you had when you were little with the Catholic Church?
I think that was part of it. I mean, I was born, and this is another beautiful thing, is there, I don't know, I mean, I love those people. I don't have any negative or hurtful feelings back towards those people, anybody in my life, but I just, it stemmed from the church. Mm-hmm. I mean, that,
part of that, it's part of the lessons of life kind of thing, right?
Yeah, but I don't see myself as a victim there.
Mm-hmm.
Good for you.
I used to, but I'm not a victim.
So how long did it take you to get from, I used to see myself as a victim to, I'm not a victim, and just blast through that? How long would you take that? And also, follow-up question behind that, is that work in progress for you?
Of course it is. I mean, I'm not fully cooked. It's just... I'm a work in progress, but the point is, there is a place in me that is absolutely perfect, in you too, that is one with God, if you like, whatever you believe God to be, that love, that ecstasy. And then there's all these other belief systems that I've learned about myself that have created pain. And so, it's a work in progress. I have an ego still, but it's much quieter. I've developed a lot of practices that I had to develop myself, or at least enhance existing practices, because science didn't have an answer for at that level. Understanding that things like when we talk about suffering, people suffering, that doesn't come in here first. These patterns that come into, they develop later out of taking in core energy from the outside that resonate at a cellular level, nervous system. It's like when you're in the kitchen and you're talking away to each other, or somebody, or a mother's talking to a daughter, and there's a certain tone used. The mother will say, well, don't talk to me with that tone, because that tone, that energy resonates up against a wound that she's carrying in her that has a certain resonance for. And really that's where hurt and pain is held. So over the years, they used to call it bioenergetics. I've done a lot of different kinds of, of energy work. But again, always knowing that I had that place in me to come back home to.
That place to come back home to. Nigel, we're coming down to the close of the show here. I wanted to, would you like to, can you give our audience some, you know, parting words, if you would, and also let them know how they can get connected with you?
Well, they can connect with me through my website at tnzen.org. I'm a nonprofit charity. And I help people whether they've got money or not. I just do. It's just my thing. And I'm able to do that. In a closing statement, I would say that there are some people who cannot change. I used to work in a state penitentiary and with sociopathic people, and they cannot affect change, which is another story. But the vast majority of people, no matter what the pain, it's easier said than done, but no matter what the pain, no matter what, they can find their way back home too. And that's my, you know, the way that I do that, it's my work on myself. And then I share that with other people, wherever appropriate, whatever stories I can tell that will help them, whatever practices I can teach that will help them become aware of that truth within themselves, of that love beyond measure that's there. It's in all of us. And
right on.
Thank you,
Nigel. A lot, everybody. Well, nice to have you on here with us today. Thank you. And I won't call you Sage as per your request, but you know, I may think that you are Sage. You look like Sage. You know what I mean? So it looks good on you. You wear it well, I would say. So it's really good to have you on here. And we look forward to having you back again, Nigel.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, no worries. We'll see you
Thank
next time.
Thank you so much.
Well, he does make you feel like really.
Yeah, very well. The name of, you know, T and Zen.
I think he's just like these subliminal, what do you call them? Embedded commands. T and Zen. I feel Zen. I hope you felt Zen, everybody, today. So it was good stuff. I hope you enjoyed it, because we most certainly did on this. And thank you again.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. And remember, tune in often, tell all your friends. And most importantly, may all your dreams come true. Many blessings.
Ashes and cinders, my friend. candles down to the end. Or should I spend the night again? And I'm asking you this because you got me all wrapped up in you. I know that you think I'm crazy. And if the truth be told, crazy for love. It could melt this frozen soul. It could save me from the cold. And I'm telling you this because you got me all wrapped up in your love.